Good friend of the show, Scotty Rintoul from TSN 1040 in Vancouver joins us. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing well. That weather report sounded like the last time I was here in Regina. We were here for the preseason affair, and if you recall, the power went out at halftime here when a transformer blew and then the showers came down after the game. It was a weird night.
I was at the Regina Field one time when the game was on and the power went out during the game. And man, like, I had never seen rain like that in Regina. And the fans, I could not believe, like, it must have been a 45-minute delay, and it was pouring. And I want to say out of the 28,000 fans over there, close to like 20,000 of them stayed through the whole thing. It was unbelievable. They were pretty diehards for sure.
Yeah, I would have expected them if it was a regular season game. It was the preseason, so many of them filtered out. But it's almost as though they need a new stadium here, Gregor. Oh, wait, there's one coming.
I know, and it's supposed to be a beauty. It's supposed to be a beauty stadium. Now, the BC Lions are in Saskatchewan. Lions have gotten off to a very good start. What has been the key, or has there been any surprises for you early on in the season for them?
Well, other than what happened in the second half last week, I think you can say the way their defense has dominated 2.5 of their games has been a little bit surprising. I think we knew this was going to be a good defensive unit, but it has been outstanding by and large. And coming into this game in Regina, it's still the only CFL defensive unit in the league that allows less than 300 yards per game. So that shows you how stingy they've been. That said, in the second half against Ricky Ray and Toronto, when they needed stops, they couldn't get them. And the one thing that really stood out last week against Toronto, there were missed tackles and there were some chunk yardage plays that they hadn't been conceding in the first two. They gave up 6 plays in excess of 25 yards last week against the Argos in that loss. And that largely is why they ended up losing that football game, that and the turnovers that they did not create and that they handed to the Argos.
Well, you know, I did watch the end of that game, and I'm sure Wally Buono wasn't enamored by it. But, you know, we've seen in Edmonton here, Mike Riley's averaging 400 passing yards per game. We're seeing in Ottawa, outstanding quarterbacking. And even in BC, got to think they're pretty happy with their young quarterback.
They are for the most part. It's the first time that they've had to pull him, but I should tee it up with the fact that Jonathan Jennings has now started only 9 regular season games in the Canadian Football League. That's half a season. It's the first time that he came out. It's not as though he was poor last week, but the offense needed a spark. He wasn't seeing the field clearly. Rich Stubler, we all know what a great defensive coordinator he is. He changed things up on Jennings after Jennings had things going early in that football game. Jennings wasn't seeing it clearly. Travis Lule came in, played extremely well, 12 of 15 for 156 yards and a touchdown, did throw an interception on his final pass when they were trying to make a late push in desperation time to see if they could find a way back into the football game. But Jennings, you know what, is expected to bounce back tomorrow. He will get the start, and this is part of the learning process for a young quarterback.
The Lions defense, they've had a lot of new faces. How's it looked? I know it's early. It's only 3 weeks, but any strengths that maybe you didn't expect?
Well, I think we knew their secondary was going to be strong other than the free safety position, and that's not a shot at Mike Edom. It was just an unknown. Really, since the BC Lions and Baron Miles finished off together 6 years ago, the Lions haven't been able to find that constant piece at the back end in the middle of their defense. So they bring in Mike Edom from Hamilton. He's been very good so far. In fact, he should have had his first interception with the Lions last week. That was part of the problem when the Lions had opportunities to make plays. They didn't make enough of them. Other than that, Solomon Elamimian has come back strong. He and Adam Big Hill have been good together. Probably the biggest surprise on the defense, because he was an unknown, is Luchez Purifoy. He's playing that nickel position, which is the Sam linebacker position in the Canadian Football League. He's a Florida product, had a chance in the NFL. Some things didn't work out off the field. He finds himself north of the border. He wears number 0, but just 3 weeks into the season, he's starting to fashion a reputation for himself. He is ultra athletic. They found a way to get him into various parts of the defense. I would say he is the biggest surprise thus far.
Scott Rintoul joins us. Scott, I want to talk a little hockey, of course. The Edmonton Oilers have made some moves. The Vancouver Canucks have made some moves. Just on paper, do you think the Canucks are better than they were last year? And if so, why?
Well, if healthy, they're better than they were last year. And that was part of the problem when Brandon Sutter went down early in the season and ultimately only played 20 games. It had a pretty big domino effect on their center ice position. You know how important center ice is, and that was the guy they were counting on to be their number 2 center. Whether he scores enough for a number 2 center that's a different argument, but they wanted to insulate Bo Horvat a little bit in his second year. If Brandon Sutter's healthy, very good two-way center. He's going to chip in offensively. He's an outstanding penalty killer as well. And at times last year, their penalty kill had problems. So if Sutter's healthy, they're better up front. Getting Louis Erickson gives them some more scoring punch. You may not have liked the contract, but you can't argue that it doesn't make them better. Radim Verbata really didn't give them anything last season, and Louis Erickson plus the Sedins should equal some goals up front. On the back end, they make the trade for Eric Gudbranson. Their defense is better. Ben Hutton will be a year older. He'll be in a top four role. I know they lose Dan Hamhuis, but Hutton was ready for more minutes. He's going to get those minutes this year. If Alex Edler is healthy, he missed a lot of the second half last year, then he and Tanev form a relatively formidable top pairing in terms of shutting down other teams. So now your top four looks a lot better than it did last year. And Jacob Markstrom took a step in goal last year. I mean, the big question goaltending-wise in Vancouver is what type of split are they going to have between Ryan Miller and Jacob Markstrom? Is it going to be 50-50? Is it going to be 60-40? Does Markstrom get a chance to show he can be a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League this season? So on paper, yes, they are better than they were last season, but a lot of that hinges on health.
Now, similar to what Order fans think for the Orders, if they're healthy, then yes, of course they're better. So let's, you know, the Brandon Sutter is an interesting one for them because maybe he's a 45 point guy, but they look at him as more of a two way player who can play the tougher minutes. Is Bo Horvat now a third line center in Vancouver to start next season, or is he a winger?
Well, he's a third line center. They'll play him down the middle, and as tough as it was on him last year, part of that adversity is what will help him be a better player. You talk about how young players handle that adversity, and though there were times where his plus minus just looked awful, whether or not you even use that as a current stat, I know there's a pretty good argument about whether or not to use that. Bo Horvat weathered the storm, and he handled it like a 10-year veteran mentally and off the ice. And when he dealt with the media, he was very good about dealing with any of the criticism that was levied his way. That will serve him well in the long run. And yeah, he's the number three center to start the season in Vancouver, but I think they'll probably look at it as a 2A and a 2B. Most people think that Bo Horvat will eventually be a regular number two center in the National Hockey League. That was probably asking a little too much in just his second year in the National Hockey League to put him up with those kind of minutes, but eventually he's going to get there. So I think they'll look at Sutter and Horvat as 2A and 2B, and I think they'll expect as much scoring from Bo Horvat or just below scoring than they will from Brandon Sutter, and maybe the combination of their second and third line centers can give you what you expect from a 2 and 3 combined as opposed to a 2 who scores, 60 points and a 3 who scores 30 points. Maybe they're both 45-point guys.
Scott Rintoul from TSN 1040 in Vancouver joins us. On the back end, Dan Hamhuis is out. Gudbranson comes in. Very different styles of players. Gudbranson big and strong. And, some people will think, if you're an analytics guy, they don't like him. Others, Gudbranson himself believes he's just learning how to play the position better now than he has in the past. His Florida Panthers teammates loved him. A lot of people thought he might be the next captain of that team. So where do you see him fitting in? And right now, who would you pencil him in playing with?
Well, it looks like he'll be with Ben Hutton. At least that's the plan to start the season. Edler Tanev will be the top pairing, and those two have formed a pretty nice pair over the last couple of years. And after that, it'll be Ben Hutton, who really was a revelation for the Canucks last year. As much as they had problems on the back end, especially with injury at times, Ben Hutton was a guy who they thought would be in the AHL last year. Instead, he was playing in the National Hockey League from day one, and he logged far more minutes than anybody thought he was capable of. With Eric Gudbranson coming in, pairing those two together is going to give Ben Hutton the ability to roam up ice a little bit further. And make no mistake, he is a guy who can carry the puck from his own end up ice and make good decisions offensively as well. He got some power play time last year. So putting a guy who's a stay-at-home, tough physical defenseman with all that character you talk about with a guy like Hutton, who does have some offensive prowess, is what Canucks fans are hoping pays off in their second pairing this year, as they watch two young players take, hopefully for them, another step.
What do you make of the Oilers offseason?
an interesting one, to be sure. Obviously, Taylor Hall is the big deal, and it'll be a pretty good debate as to whether or not they got enough for him. It doesn't feel like it on paper, but they needed to find a defenseman, and sometimes you pay a pretty big price. I'm interested to see how it works out. Getting Milan Lucic, that's a pretty nice place to go ride shotgun if, in fact, he plays with Connor McDavid. And we certainly know Luch well out in Vancouver. You're bringing in a character guy, a tough guy, a guy who's shown that he can score to a certain extent in the National Hockey League. And again, if you're playing with Connor McDavid, and if that's where they end up penciling him in, you're going to score. You're going to find points. So I like what the Oilers have done. It feels like a year where they have to take another step, but I know we said that before, and I think for most people, let's see the proof in the pudding. If Connor McDavid stays healthy, I find it hard to believe the Edmonton Oilers aren't a better team. And I'm sure everybody in Edmonton feels the exact same way.
Yeah, they have to be. Now, the Oilers and the Canucks were both in pursuit of Milan Lucic, but he elected not to play in his hometown. Felt like there'd be a lot of distractions and other things. Plus, there was no Connor McDavid in Vancouver. I do wonder, had the Oilers not won the lottery, and of all things, or even if he would have chose Edmonton over Vancouver, or if he then maybe would have elected somewhere else rather than to go home. Because going home as an NHL player in a Canadian market isn't always as great as it looks.
It can be great, or it can be trouble. And I think Milan Lucic has been around long enough to know that. Look, he was celebrated in Vancouver as a junior. Hometown kid, makes good, wins Memorial Cup, and then all of a sudden he's in the National Hockey League at 18 years of age. He wasn't public enemy number one when the Bruins beat the Canucks in the 2011 Stanley Cup final, but that did sour a few people on him because he was playing for the opposition and, of course, ripping away the dream that Canucks fans have had since 1970. And I think you make a couple of valid points about whether or not it's a good idea to go home. I personally thought Edmonton was a better fit for Milan Lucic for a number of reasons. First of all, the length of contract he was going to get, where he is in his career, and where the Oilers should be going over the course of that contract. And I'm not sure that he fit Vancouver perfectly. I think he looks better in an Oilers uniform for him. And I think the Canucks probably are... It sounds wrong to say they're better off not having signed Milan Lucic, but I'm not sure he's the player they should have been building around at this point of their development and their evolution either.
Scott Rintoul joins us from TSN 1040 in Vancouver. Where do you see Jake Virtanen this coming season for the Canucks? Would he be better off in the American League rather than playing low down the lineup on that team? What do you think they do with him?
That's a great question, and I think it's one that Canucks fans are debating right now, and I think it's one they'll debate all summer. Jake Virtanen showed flashes of brilliance last year. He's a big, young kid. He can get around the ice. He can play a physical role for you. So he can do things out there that make you say he's having an impact on the game without scoring. And that's a very good thing when you're a young player in the National Hockey League, because it insulates you from those who say, well, where are the points? Where are the points? Well, look, he's causing a little bit of chaos on the forecheck. He's getting into corners. He's providing a physical deterrent for certain players on the ice as well. That said, there are questions about Jake Virtanen's maturity. He is owed a training camp certainly for the amount of time he spent in Vancouver last year. He is owed a training camp to see where he is at. But I think there are a lot of people who believe he would be better off in the American Hockey League for a couple of reasons. One, as you suggested, playing further up the line, getting big time minutes, getting more power play time. And number two, sometimes it's good in a young player's career, if you have questions about a player's maturity, to send a message that it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to work for it, and you're going to have to prove that you deserve your spot in the lineup. Again, Jake Virtanen is owed training camp for sure. Let's see where he's at.
And what would you rate or make the job of head coach in Vancouver for the last 2 years, Willie Desjardins? Because to me, you know, you're only as good as your players. And obviously last year, Henrik Sedin was banged up. What do you make of his job as a head coach? What has he done well? What are some areas that maybe he's needed to improve in?
Well, last year, I think one of the criticisms that was fair of Willie Desjardins is that early in the season, he tried to go with only veterans late stages of games, and it cost the Vancouver Canucks. He did not trust the youngsters late in games to get the Canucks through third period leads, to get them in situations where they could maybe come back, and it burned him because the veterans did not see those games out. So all of a sudden people said, why aren't you playing the youngsters? If your team isn't going to be able to win hockey games, at least give these kids some playing time in critical minutes and let them make their mistakes so that they can be better further down the road. Now, I agree with you about what the Canucks had last year, and I think management basically came right out and said that and talked about that behind closed doors to Willie DeJardin, and that's why you saw a lot of young players get a lot more ice time throughout the course of the season, that there was an admission, look, maybe we don't have the horses this year. Maybe we should have given you more to work with. If we're going to be in that situation, let's at least get these young kids some experience. And I think, I'm not going to say they guaranteed him job security, but I think they had a chat with Willie DeJardin and basically admitted, this isn't all on you. It's on us as well as a management group. The year before, I think we can say it was certainly a success for the regular season. It didn't go as well in the playoffs when they lost in six games to the Calgary Flames. And he made some mistakes in that series. He didn't play the Sedins enough. He relied on rolling four lines too much. So I think this is a bit of a referendum year in Vancouver for Willie DeJardin. He, as we talked about at the outset of this conversation about hockey, should have a better lineup if they are healthy. And if they have a better lineup, this is a management group and this is an ownership group that believes they should be in the mix for a playoff spot. If they struggle early in the season, there's a lot of people that are going to question whether or not Willie DeJardin has job security, especially because the organization is quite keen on what Travis Green has done at the AHL level.
Yeah, well, he's the coach, is kind of that hot AHL coach right now, right? And I wonder how they maybe look at that if they feel he's the predecessor.
I think there's a lot of people wondering the same thing. And then they bring in a guy here as an assistant coach in Doug Jarvis to replace Glenn Gulletson, who took the head coaching job in Calgary. So you bring in a guy who's got a lot of experience and has been around a winning organization in Boston, a guy who's got some cups on the resume in a coaching capacity, though they were not as a head coach with Doug Jarvis. So there's a couple of potential replacements. I don't want to usher Willie DeJardin out the door, but you have to think that there are at least viable replacements if the Canucks get off to a poor start and they look to change things up, as so many teams often do in the National Hockey League. But back to Travis Green, you're right. He is that hot AHL coaching candidate. I think there's a lot of people who wondered if he would, in fact, get an NHL coaching job this offseason. He was, I'm not going to say offered concretely an assistant coaching job in Vancouver, but I know the discussions were had between management and Travis Green, and it was his preference to remain a head coach in the American Hockey League rather than go the assistant route in the National Hockey League. He wants to be the one making decisions. He wants to be the one running a bench, and eventually he wants to do that National Hockey level, whether it's with Vancouver or somewhere else.
Scotty, always great to talk to you, man. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the game tonight, the Bombers and the Riders. The Lions and the Riders.
Yeah, we'll have fun with that one tomorrow. We'll got my Friday night football on right now. We'll see if Daron Carter and Kent Austin shove one another, tonight. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Scotty.